Welcome to the Cloquet Vineyard. To find out more of who we are, go to cloquetvineyard.org. Thanks for listening and have a good and beautiful day.
We're in a series called Pause. And I say it for the last couple of messages, there's something really healthy about getting silent. There's something really powerful about slowing down. Instead of just putting our head down, moving fast, and then we wake up Sunday and it's Easter, like there's something rich about pausing and thinking through the why. Why, if there's a good God, why did he have to die? Why the cross? Why, like, it's very, very rich. It makes your experience even better. And today, we're talking about something I learned from a Franciscan friar. His name's Richard Rohr. And I was at this men's weekend. Remember, it's never a men's retreat. Why? Because men never retreat, right? That's a good one. That's a good one, right? And men's weekend, I don't remember the name of it. It was probably something like get tough for Jesus, or like, you know, fight the devil, something very aggressive, because that's men, that's what we do, right? But I heard it was this guy who was going to be sharing from this book that he read from Richard Rohr. And I've heard Richard Rohr speak a couple times, listened to a lot of his podcasts, read his books. And Richard Rohr, it's like you hear him and his voice is like butter, right? It's just smooth. And then you just want to, you want to grow and learn from the things he talks. The way he approaches spirituality is so rich and life-giving. And so I'm really, really excited. And I open up my notes to see like the topics they're talking on. And here's the five. I think you will equally feel my enthusiasm. The first one was called Life is Hard. Then You Are Not That Important. Your life isn't about you. You are not in control. And lastly, wrapping it up with You Are Going to Die. Right? I know. And you're like, yeah, thanks, Richard. Love it. And it actually like took me back. I'm like, what? No. Like, I even felt a little offended. And why? Because I clearly know that I am very important, right? Richard must not have met me yet. I'm very important and I am in control. I'm doing pretty well. I was like 27, so I knew everything, right? And the idea of talking about death at a spiritual like retreat was like, no, death doesn't happen to 27-year-olds, right? I have young kids. No, death happens other places, other people, other families, other countries. Like, no, I am in control. I'm very, very important. And life is hard, but if I just work harder, it's going to get better, right? And it doesn't really work out that way. But we learn something in these experiences. The reason that Richard walks through this, and the book is actually written primarily to men. This impacts everyone. But what he says, if you don't learn these five things, just as a human, you don't learn these five things through a healthy way, you're going to learn in maybe a different way. Everybody pays. Everybody learns these lessons at some point. But we don't like it because we avoid death. We don't like the idea of that we're not that important. We live in America. We're number one. These colors never run, right? We always, always win. And we are taught to win at a young age, that to lose is failure. It's weakness. Be vulnerable as long as it only helps you win even more, right? You have to succeed. You have to be not just in your job, but you have to have the best marriage. You have to have the best body. You have to have the best like kids. And my kids don't have GMOs, right? And I'm better because of that. And all these things we feel, we look around, like our shoes, our cars, our homes, our jokes, what we talk about, what we read, what we don't read. Well, I don't read that, right? Well, there's this aggressive, we have to keep going. And especially, just to speak to men for a moment, especially as men, this is inside of us. That we want to win, we want to provide, we want to succeed. And so early on, we have this ascension and we go up. But you can only ascend so far, you can only run so hard before you learn these lessons. That life really isn't about you. And life is really hard and you are not in control. And yes, you are going to die. So like, think about this. How do you learn? How do we learn? And I'm not talking, like, you learn from books, you learn from maybe a class, maybe you learn from talking with some friends. I'm talking about how do you have transformational growth of when you are woke to this whole new reality? How do many people learn? Crisis, right? Maybe you lost a parent. Maybe you got cancer. Maybe you had a financial, like you lost your job, you lost your house, your kid got severely sick, some like life-altering thing happened to you, and the people that I've interacted with in that, they say, the things I thought that were important, the things I was complaining about, the things that I was investing in, the things that I gave my heart and my best to, turns out didn't really matter. Like, when you have a loved one who's going through something incredibly, incredibly painful, like a sickness or like cancer, you reevaluate everything, right? You start thinking, oh, I should have been there before. I should have been a better son. I should have been a better dad. I should have been a better friend. I should have showed up earlier. I should have given, and we do, you know, we should on ourselves over and over and over again. And why do we do that? Because we see something new. That our relationships, our love, our quality time with our kids, of telling people that we actually really love them. Before that, you're just like, gotta go, gotta win, gotta be driven, gotta succeed. And what Richard Rohr, think about this, right? When you think about midlife crisis, like as I was writing this, I am turning 38 at some point, right? And I know what you guys are all thinking, wow, I thought he was so much older because he's so accomplished and such a great leader, right? You laughed a little too hard. Just so you know, she's like, oh, it's funny because it's true. What am I saying? Oh, you think of midlife crisis, at least for me. Like, I actually started thinking about it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to turn 40 at some point here soon. And like, oh, 40, that's, yeah, I remember like other people when I was a kid turning 40. And you're thinking, ooh, what have I done with my life? What do I want to do with my life? Midlife crisis happens, I usually only hear about men, and how do they handle it? They spend a lot of money on things they don't need. They seek pleasure in some sort of way. And I've actually talked to a couple of guys that are going through this. I'm like, do you think like leaving your wife right now is really going to bring you that much more life? Oh yeah, man. If you met this lady I'm having this affair with, this is gonna get me everything I want. I'm like, I might disagree. Because you're like the 10 millionth person to do this, and I haven't seen it work out so well for everyone else. So go blow money to blow your relationships, to burn your bridges. And why? Because at some point they want to hold on to something saying, no, I am important. And my pleasure is the most important thing. And me to win. And what Richard Rohr talks about in this book is, it's like you can be running and running at a young age, and life is always behind you. It's always behind you. And when you get a little bit older, life catches up to you, and all of a sudden it's in your peripherals. And you're like, whoa, hey, what? Who are you? you're back there. I will never die. I will never lose. I'll never slow down. And funny, like, life just continues to get more and more before it's right in front of you. And what a lot of us do is we just want to, like, say, nope, not me. I'm different. I will live forever. I will always win. And when you hit those crises, you hit those things, you have to learn. And what Richard Rohr says, and what we're going to be talking about today, is how can we, at a younger age, in advance, without having to go through the crisis, how can we go from order, which is we have everything figured out when you're young. I know everything. Then there's disorder, right? Then there is this reorder, this brand new, mystical, kingdom-filled, good and beautiful life. Like, all of us want this. Every person wants a rich, meaningful life that you're really, really hungry for. Like, when your head hits the pillow and you start dreaming of, like, what is it I really want? It's like, that's the reorder. Only way into that new life is you have to go through disorder, where what is up, what is down. Everything I thought was true, everything I believed in, maybe it's not as black and white, maybe it's not as simple, maybe it's not as easy. And how can you get into that place without having to go through a crisis? We can ask questions. We can learn. We can get really curious. We can engage with other people. We can, like we just told the third graders, we could like just consume the scriptures. Because all throughout the story of the Bible, throughout the life of Jesus, he invites us over and over, and what does he say? He doesn't say, hey, just try hard. Come and try harder. He doesn't say, hey, come and just be pleasant. He says, come and die. Come and die. See, in order to experience new life, in order to experience even continued growth, it happens through death. It is all around us. Like, think about your dinner. Something had to die for you to eat, for you to have energy, for you to continue to sustain and to grow, regardless if it's an animal, a plant, or a vegetable, right? Or whatever tofu is, right? Like, something had to end in order for something to grow. I read about your skin, right? Skin is an amazing, amazing, very important thing. Big fan of the skin, right? That every hour, you lose about 30 to 40,000 skin cells. And that's kind of weirded me out. Like, I started touching my arm a lot more. I'm like, what? Is it on me? All right? And then almost like about every year, you have totally brand new skin. Because as it's coming up, it's pushing out the cells so you can continue to have healthy skin. And then the old ones have to die. They have to go to make room for the new ones. If you think about emotional healing, something has to die. You have to put that lie to bed of saying, I'm just a loser. I never have value. My dad was right. I'm going to be a nobody. I deserve to get hit because I'm never going to be correct. Whatever that lie is that you have followed, I have no self-worth, so I'll just self-destruct in order to feel better. That has to die in order to walk into this truth of I have value, I have purpose, I have life, that I am deeply, deeply loved by God. I love that Sarah said that you are a child of God who is deeply loved. You have to die to that lie. I mean, our seasons, the reason we can celebrate summer is because there was fall and winter and there was death, but that creates room for all things new. But we hate this idea. We don't like death. We don't like dying. We don't like the idea of sacrificing. We don't like the idea of surrendering. But the way in, friends, of this good and beautiful life, the way we get to Easter of the celebration has to come the cross. We can't avoid it. And we pretend like we can. I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, I pretend like I can. I can keep it going. I'm strong enough. I'm smart enough. I'm good looking enough, right? And we just try harder, but what Jesus invites us into is saying that lie, that false self will only bring more death. It will only bring more pain and more hurt. It's like there's this invitation, and we see it in the life of Jesus. Jesus talks about it over and over and over again. We see it. We're going to be reading out of John chapter 12. And if you'd like to read along, you can. There's some Bibles in the back. You can open up your smartphone. But this is just like one little snapshot. Like throughout the life of Jesus, throughout the story of the Bible, of the divine, we see the same exact message, which we're going to talk through. Starting in verse 20, this is what John wrote. Now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the festival, and they came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida at Galilee, with a request. Sir, they said, we would like to see Jesus. Philip went to tell Andrew, and Andrew and Philip in turn told Jesus. And Jesus replied, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Anyone who loves their life will lose it, while anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. Now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Love this. I can't tell if Jesus is being sarcastic or not, right? Because like when he says, now my soul is troubled, what shall I say? Like overdramatic, right? And then he's like, no, I don't mess around, I'm Jesus, right? Or what if it's like real? What if it's real? Because before this, people would come up, Mary came up to him and said, hey, Jesus, there's this wedding going on. They need all this. They ran out of wine. Can you do your thing? And what does Jesus tell his own mother? He goes, woman. Never call your mother woman, by the way, all right? That's one thing don't follow Jesus in. Right? There's one caveat, all right? So he says, woman, it is not my time. Jesus says this over again, this is not my time. The time has not yet come. There will be a time. Now, all of a sudden, why is the time come? What's happening at this time where Jesus now identifies saying, hey, now it's time. Well, here's what's happening. The word here, the Greeks, right, weren't just some people that just showed up from Greece and like, hey, let's go see Jesus, right? Let's go walk on down, right? The Greeks were they were these like the outsiders, the others, and they came to worship in this festival, this news of this kingdom of heavens that Jesus keeps talking about, this idea of a good and beautiful God, this idea of that if you're a woman or you were sick, you were down low, that Jesus went to you first and elevated you, and the idea of we can love differently, and out of that loving differently can bring this new life. Those who are out are now in. That's a beautiful message. And so these people, like from the other, like the immigrants, the outsiders, they show up and they're like, we want in. Jesus hears us, and what does he say? Now the time has come. And Jesus activates this whole series of events of where he gives up his life. Why? Because he understands the only way to get new life, the only way for the people, the others, the outsiders, the only way for, even when in Genesis 12, when God speaks to Abram, who becomes Abraham, he has this promise of you'll be a tribe, you'll be a people that'll be so radically different than everyone else. That you're going to go and you're going to bless them. You're not going to wait for them to come to you and say, will you bless us? You will actively go and say, we give, we give, we give, we give, we love, we love, we love. We build up. It's a different God. Jesus embodies, he knows that call. And he says, now's the time. Why? Because we are going to actively bless. We are going to be so different the way we love. It's going to look scandalous and unfair. He realized the only way to get to that is I have to die. A seed has to die. If it doesn't die, it's just going to lay there. But if it dies and breaks open, there is new life. There's a new opportunity. And it's interesting. It's easy to think about Jesus. I said this at Roots at youth group. We can see Jesus as like cute little European white Jesus who's just happy all the time, right? How he can just like float through life and like, here's some wine, here's some bread, you're healed, right? And it's like he just shows up like skipping up to the Roman soldiers and, hey, right, it's time to die. Let's get this over with, right? I got some stuff to do. In a couple days, I have to come out of that grave, right? Like Jesus was murdered. He was murdered. He shows us what real love looks like when he says the greatest love is for one to lay down his life for his friends. Jesus shows the path of a non-resistance kind of love, of how the world wants to say to get what you want is through force. Jesus says, actually, it looks like getting low. And he gave himself, but he still endured all these things. And he says it several times of like, hey, my soul is troubled. Should I really go through with this? Yeah, I'm going to do it. Because I say yes to God. Why am I going to do it? Because unless there is death, there will not be new life. And it's so interesting. And this idea of surrendering, this idea of sacrifice, there is all this new life. In Hebrews, it talks about how this God does not desire this blood sacrifice. It was never part of his plan. Like the people who like started the whole sacrifice thing, if you see it in Genesis, it's like God's like, hey, I really love you. And the next part, there's people like bringing sacrifices. That this was like a normal part of that culture at that time. And God keeps reinserting himself into culture, into art, into generations, into their stories and saying, do you see me? And Jesus says, we're moving away from the blood and we're moving to the love. And through this act of sacrifice, there's brand new life available for everybody. And it's on me. There's something beautiful about a sacrifice. You know what's interesting though? We just want it to be someone else, right? Like we celebrate firefighters, right? Like Caleb, he's a firefighter, just married him. Congratulations, right? And we celebrate people like Caleb because they run into buildings and we say, wow, way to go, man. Hey, you want to run into that building? No, I'm good. I'm pretty, pretty good. We celebrate sacrifice. What does it look like for you? If we say we're going to be Jesus-looking people, what does it look like for you to sacrifice? Like, if I ask you, what are you avoiding? What death are you avoiding? What pain are you running away from? Like, when you walk through incredibly difficult things, what we want to do initially is just pretend like it's not happening. And when we dig our heels in, when we say, no, this is not true, this is not happening to me. Cancer does not happen to people like me. I don't lose a job. No, I will. Our marriage is fine. We're going to pretend like it's fine because this doesn't happen to us. When you dig your heels in like that, you are missing out. You're actually moving backwards through that crisis, through that pain, through that sacrifice, through that surrender, friends. There is Jesus saying on the other end, saying, look at me. New life is here. We don't have to run away from pain. We don't have to run away from death. Why? Because we have a Jesus-looking God. It's interesting because love always gives. Always. Love always gives. And it's like God's trying to invite us into something. It's like the divine is trying to show us something. Think of the things that Jesus talks about. Think about the things in the Bible that the divine is continually inviting us into. Because what religion will tell you is we have the Ten Commandments, we have these rules, we have these expectations, and just start checking the boxes, right? Don't kill anyone. Okay, yeah. Not today. Day ain't over yet, right? But I can check it off, right? And not steal, don't covet, don't lust, all those things. And you just like check them off and say, I'm good. Religion just tells you, just perform. But God, it seems like he's trying to do something different. It's almost like he's trying to engage every part of our being. Imagine that your life is made up of thousands of arrows, and every arrow is pointing towards you being selfish in this area, and me wanting pleasure with this person, this and this website. And if I can just like just delay my thinking through drinking this, if I can make fun of you and attack you, then I can avoid thinking about my own self-worth and all these arrows. It's like the divine is saying, hey, let's move those arrows towards me, which one at a time. Because what God invites us into is to give. To give. To love our enemies. It's to give unfair love. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. My brother, Dano, last week talked about poverty. To engage and give to those in need. Give. That we are called to love our neighbors as we love ourselves, to give love to people that we might not even know. Talks throughout the Bible extensively about leaving even your crop, not taking all of it, so that when the immigrants walk through that they can actually eat, to welcome the foreigner. Talks about tithing. Everyone's favorite subject at church, talking about tithing, right? About giving of your resources, 10%. 10%. And it seems like I've had people saying like, well, that's just asinine. Why? Why would you give 10% of your money back to the church? I won't lie to you. I will not lie. It's not like every time that I do that, you know, I was saying like, I don't write checks anymore because I'm not a millennial, but I'm, for right now, I'll just say that because it makes me sound cool, right? So I'm a millennial and like as I type out my check, right? It's not like every time I hit send, I'm like, yeah. Woo, go Jesus. There's times where I'm like, oh yeah, that would be nice to have. That's sacrificial giving. Like of giving love, giving forgiveness. The way that we receive forgiveness is through forgiving others, through giving of my time to serve the poor, or even just to like, just be quiet. I don't like being quiet. I'm a high extrovert. And taking an hour just to be quiet. It's like God is trying to take every one of those arrows, just one at a time. So are you willing to surrender this, Chris? Are you willing to surrender you wanting to be right about that political idea? Hey, Chris, are you ready to move that arrow towards me and trust that even though that person hurt you, by you ignoring them is not going to bring life to them, nor you, are you ready to die? Arrow after arrow. Like, God is engaging our hearts. Why? Because he's angry at us, right? He wants you to give, saying, because you screwed up and now it's time to pay. I'm God. You're welcome. No, why is he invited us to give? Because he's crazy about you. He wants you to thrive. He wants you to be like the best senior high student. He wants you to have an incredible life, not just later, but like now. And how do you do that? See, giving 10%, like willing to never be right, willing to actively give your life for the sake of others, to love your enemies, to the point of willing to give up your life for someone else seems crazy. And it is absolutely foolish outside of the cross. If there is no cross, then this is a bad idea, right? Because what our culture tells you is win, hold on, thrive, succeed. But when you look at the cross, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 1, where is it? Right here. 1 Corinthians 1, he says, the message that points to Christ on the cross seems like sheer silliness to those hell-bent on destruction. But for those on the way of salvation, it makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. You see, we do this thing on the food pantry, which is just going great. I imagine that there were some people in January when it was negative 20 degrees. I bet all of them woke up and said, I can't wait to stand outside. I can't wait to hand out cereal to people. It's going to be so great. I imagine there's one or two that were like, ugh. Right? But you know what they do? They show up. And I would bet my life that no one left that place thinking, what a waste of time. I wish I had my 2.5 hours back. Not one. Why? There's something life-giving. There's heaven when we give. There's heaven when we give. That is sacrifice, my friends. See, when we look at the cross, and it's not just a cute little symbol, it's not just a nice little religious game that we play. We look at the cross to see that there is a good and beautiful God who got vulnerable. There was a God who lost. There was a God who died. There was a God who gave it all. But giving it all sounds really nice, but he lost. He looked stupid. God looks silly on that cross. Gods don't die. Gods don't lose. Gods are not vulnerable. Gods are not weak. And here is a God who didn't get tricked. Like some mythology, like they like tricked him and like, oh no, right? Like he willingly gave it up and died and lost. See, we know the rest of the story. So you look at Easter and say, oh, he just kind of lost. No, he lost. God lost. God died. There was a time that he died. Cross shows that losing, that dying, that weakness, that being vulnerable, those are not a threat, friends. It flips it all on its head. Things that we avoid, things that we tease, things that we mock of, I will never. Jesus says, look at me, I died, I lost, I was weak, I was vulnerable. It redefines everything. And when you look through life, when you look at a good and beautiful life through the lens of the cross, it changes the words, it changes the definitions. Now these words have a new meaning of that life is hard. You are not that important. Your life isn't about you. You are not in control. And you're going to die. When we look through the cross, those five things now don't feel like we have to run away. They don't feel like, oh, I'm putting your thumb down. Now we can stand and say yes. We can embrace it. And it can actually become this badge of who we are as healthy women, as healthy men, as Jesus-looking people. Why? Because we know that through all those five things, on the back end of it, is heaven itself. That good and beautiful life happens through the cross, happens through death, happens through sacrifice. So my invitation to you for the next, well, we have 2 weeks of Lent. Like, take some time, meditate, get quiet. However you like pause and still your mind. Maybe for you, like there's times in my life where I actually need to go running in order to pause. I gotta turn my brain off. Whatever it looks like for you, and think about, where am I avoiding death? Where is God asking me to sacrifice? And it might be your time. It might be a toxic relationship. It might be money, guys. It might be your leadership. It might be, I was just thinking about this. Nikki and I were talking about this. Of there's people in my life, some of my friends, who have given their lives to something. And I'm like, you could go out and do this and make fat stacks of cash, like where they're piling up, where they tip over, there's so much money, right? You could be celebrated. You could be wooing people, but you choose to do this for barely any money and no recognition. And I'll be like, why are they doing that? I have to pause. I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. Because God has called them to, and just because they appear like they might lose, they are winning. You might be here in a third grade teacher, and your leadership, your creativity, the way you do music at school, all these things. You can say, I could go out and do this, but for this time, I'm going to give myself to blow these minds and show them what it looks like to have fun during music class. Where are you avoiding death? So what I'd like to do is I'd like to pray for us, if you wouldn't mind standing. I could talk about that all day long. So here's my first, invite you to something, we're going to pray, and then after that, we're going to invite our ministry team to come up, and we're going to worship for a little bit. My first one is this. If you're here today, and you are a spiritual person, or you are leaning into spirituality, or you're questioning spirituality, you're in a beautiful place, friends. Where we all start is by surrendering. Like the way into Christ, the way into relationship with the divine is through sacrificing. And the church for a while has words like, you got to surrender your life to Jesus, which sometimes just feels like this cute little saying, but really it's true. Like where we need to start is to mimic Jesus of where we need to die. Where we say, okay, God, I'm willing to lose to my dreams. I am really important, that I am number one. And I'm going to give up my life to you. And how you do that is just by being honest. Saying, I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know how it's all going to play out. But where I want to start is I'm just going to say yes. And there's this beautiful thing when you say yes to Jesus. No matter when you do it, something beautiful happens. So if you'd like to say yes to Jesus in any shape, way, or form, wherever you're at in that journey of spirituality, I'm going to pray and I'd love to have you join me. Let's pray. So Holy Spirit, God's like felt presence, will you come? And I thank you that you gave. And as we take time this week, even now, we take time just to even pause right now and say, thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for your life. And I thank you for your death. And that through the cross, being weak, losing, surrendering, does not reveal that we are puny, does not reveal that we are small, insignificant, does not reveal that we lost. But it shows that there's a good and beautiful God, that when we give our best to this God, what we get is more. So we just, even now, we just give our life to you. We say yes to you. And will you come and bring life to me? Will you bring life in me? Fill me up so that I can continue to give to my friend. I can continue to give to my enemy. I can give something even more than myself to the people around me. What I'm giving is the kingdom. What I'm giving is heaven. So I surrender to you. I love you, Jesus. Teach me the same prayer we say for the kids. Show me what it looks like to be loved and to love every single day. Amen. So if the ministry team can make their way up, we take time every week to pray. And two things, if you'd like the idea, you feel like you're avoiding death, you're avoiding pain, we'd love to have someone stand with you. Sometimes you need someone else to say, yeah, me too. And they'll pray with you through that. And the second thing is this, if the whole idea of right now, you just like, I wanna like have life with the divine, I want to engage in spirituality, and like someone to talk with about it, the people up here would love to do that as well. We're going to worship for a little bit longer and enjoy your Sunday.